Chapter 9. I used my far-seeing bowl to watch Bone Cruncher fly to the Purple Mountains. When he didn't come back, I turned myself into a bird again and flew to the castle, arriving shortly after dark. Everyone had been hard at work getting ready for the party. Men had carried hogsheads of ale from the cellar under the kitchen. Maids had removed the old rushes and debris from years past before scrubbing the floor of the great hall. The new rushes they'd spread were scented with herbs, making the room smell wonderful. Torches had been cleaned or replaced, tables and benches set around the room, and colorful banners hung from the ceiling. Additional guests had arrived, bringing their servants with them. Hazel had been busy using her own special talent. A table in the buttery was piled high with everlasting bouquets of roses, lilies, and some dainty white flowers I didn't recognize, all looking as fresh as if they'd just been picked. I wondered if she'd really made enough, or if I should make extra myself. I remembered dyspepsia's words, and I had to keep myself from making too many changes. Flowering vines spread across the walls of the great hall, dripping pink and lavender blossoms. Sturdy trees had sprouted in the corners of the room, arching to meet the ceiling in cascades of delicate leaves and pale yellow blooms. Even the herbs sprinkled throughout the rushes on the floor looked as if they had taken root and were growing. I found Millie talking to Jasper, Fenton, and Edric. Of the other young men who had volunteered to kill the dragon, one had changed his mind and gone home, while a second had disappeared downriver, chasing a water nymph. Edric admitted that he and another knight had continued on until they realized that they were lost. After wandering around for most of the afternoon, they'd stumbled into a woodcutter who had showed them the way back to the castle. Millie seemed relieved to see me and couldn't wait to talk to me alone.
"I know Jasper needed help, but I felt awful leaving you the way I did," she said. "I worried about you all the way home. Did everything go well?"
I nodded. "That dragon shouldn't bother anyone around here again."
"When Garrett came back from hunting, I asked if he'd seen you. He said he hadn't and offered to go look."
"Did you tell him why I was in the woods?" She shook her head.
"I said you went for a walk and hadn't returned yet. I'd better go tell him that you're back. He was going to the kitchen first to drop off some rabbits he'd killed."
"I'll go," I said. "I'd like to meet this mysterious prince." Finding Garrett wasn't hard this time. Since Millie had told me about him, I knew he had to be the tall, young, blonde knight I'd found chatting with the head cook. What Millie hadn't mentioned was that he was the handsomest prince in the castle, with his chiseled features and broad shoulders, and that he made all the other visiting princes, including Edric, look like little boys. Although everyone in the kitchen was working long hours to prepare for the party, they'd taken the time to inspect the rabbits he'd brought, already bled and gutted. While the cooks praised the rabbits, giggling kitchen helpers fawned over Garrett, but I had the feeling he wasn't listening to any of them. "Prince Garrett," I said as he left the kitchen, "may I have a moment of your time?" He raised an eyebrow and said,
"Do I know you?"
"I'm Emma. Millie said that you had offered to go looking for me, so I came to tell you that I'm back now." A spark of recognition lit his eyes.
"So, you're Emma. I've heard all about you."
"You have?" I said, wondering what Millie might have told him. Garrett patted me on the shoulder and smiled. The moment he touched me, I knew there was something different about him. Once I wouldn't have noticed it, but since my power had increased, I was sensitive to all the magic around me. In some way I didn't recognize, Garrett had magic.
"Don't worry," he said. "Your secret's safe with me."
Stepping around me, he strode off down the hall. I felt cold all over, as if someone had opened a door on winter. My secret? Which secret was that? In this time and place, I had too many to keep track of easily, too many things I didn't want people to know. What had Millie told him? That I was a witch? that I wasn't Frederica's daughter? Or had someone finally figured out that I didn't belong there at all? I hurried back to the Great Hall to see Millie, but it was crowded when I arrived and everyone was talking excitedly.
"Did you hear?" said one of Queen Angelica's ladies to another. "Jasper and Fenton fought the dragon. Fenton says they chased it off." "I heard he dealt it a grievous wound. The monster will probably bleed to death."
I wandered through the hall, looking for Millie and hearing snatches of conversation.
"Fenton says it was enormous, the biggest dragon he'd ever seen."
"Its teeth were strong enough to cut through stone. He said it can chew up rocks and spit them out again."
"Have you seen Prince Jasper's armor? You can see where the dragon bit him."
I nodded. That much was true. I finally found Millie gnawing on her lip as she tried not to say a word. I knew how she felt, because I would have liked to squash a few rumors myself. I ground my teeth and tried to keep a pleasant expression on my face.
"I'm going to bed now, Millie," I said. "I have to get up early tomorrow morning. Very early."
Meeting Garrett had only made me more interested in him. Of all the princes courting Hazel, I had a feeling that he was the one I'd really have to watch. Apparently, the only way to do that was to follow him when he went hunting. Maybe I could learn why he always went alone. Could he be using magic? When I tried to find Edric to ask him if he wanted to go with me, a squire told me that he was meeting with King Grunwald to discuss the best way to deal with werewolves and probably wouldn't be back until late. I waited in the Great Hall for another hour or so and was about to give up and go to bed when Edric entered, talking to one of the squires. Running to Edric's side, I told the squire,
"Excuse us, we have something important to discuss."
"Really?" said Edric. "Like what?"
"That depends," I said after the squire had taken his leave.
"What are you doing tomorrow morning?"
"Sleeping," Edric said. "I haven't gotten much rest since I started sharing a room with 5 other princes."
"How would you like to go hunting with me?" I asked. Edric raised an eyebrow.
"Hunting? You were never interested in hunting before. What do you plan to hunt?"
"Answers. I think it's about time someone followed Garrett and found out what he's really doing. Don't you think it's a little suspicious that he goes off by himself every day?"
"You think he's up to no good?" asked Edric.
"I think he's up to something," I said. "He's too secretive to be innocent. Do you want to go with me? We'd have to leave early."
Edric sighed.
"Of course I'll go with you. I'll just have to sleep late another day. Maybe in a week or two."
It was easy to get up before dawn the next morning, since I tossed and turned all night. When I couldn't lie in bed staring at the ceiling any longer, I dressed as quietly as I could so I wouldn't wake Millie. I met Edric as we'd agreed, and we slipped downstairs to the Great Hall together. The guards were dozing at their posts, so we tiptoed past them to stand beneath one of the windows. With one eye on the closest guard, I turned Edric and myself into bats, and we fluttered through the opening. Being able to see in the dark meant that we didn't need to wait until dawn when the guards would lower the drawbridge, and we could be ready and waiting when Garrett arrived. Besides, being a bat was fun when no one was chasing you. We flew to the maze and called for Lil, but it seemed to take forever before she answered. While I perched on her rosebush, Edric darted back and forth, catching his breakfast of mosquitoes.
"Where have you been?" I asked Lil when she finally appeared.
"With Bugsy," she said, with a faraway look in her eyes.
Edric gulped, swallowing a mosquito, and asked,
"Who's Bugsy?"
Lil sighed.
"He's the most wonderful bat in the world. He doesn't know it yet, but I've decided to stay here with him."
"You mean until we go home?" I said.
"No. I mean forever. I love him, Emma. Bugsy is the perfect bat for me. I've never met anyone like him before, and I probably never will again. He's sweet and funny and thoughtful. I hope you'll be as happy with Edric as I know I'm going to be with Bugsy.
Are you sure, Lil? I asked. This seemed totally bizarre, but maybe I had been too focused on the human world, or myself.
Have you really thought about this? If you stay here when Edric and I leave, you'll be stuck in the past forever. And you don't know a thing about Bugsy. You don't even know his real name. You made up the name Bugsy, remember?
Past, future, what difference does it make to me, Emma? I'll miss you and Edric, but my life is here with Bugsy. I know he's wonderful, and that's enough for me.
The sound of rattling chains and groaning wood announced the lowering of the drawbridge. It was happening earlier than was normal in my day, perhaps at Prince Garrod's request. A figure crossed the bridge and started down the road toward the forest, a bow slung over his shoulder. I'm glad we came early, I thought, and took to the air.
I'll talk to you about this later, Lil. This is a very big decision.
Lil was my friend, and I didn't want to leave her behind in the past, but I didn't see what I could do about it.
Don't wake me if I'm asleep, said the little bat, yawning broadly.
It was generally unheard of for a member of my own royal family to go hunting without a group of friends or servants, and I was sure it was just as unusual in Millie's. Even so, Garrod strode alone down the road with great confidence, acting as if he was used to walking in the pre-dawn dark by himself. Edric and I flew behind him, staying far enough back that we could see him, but where, I hoped, he wouldn't see us. The black of night was graying to morning when Garrod entered the woods, although it was still dark under the trees. If we hadn't been bats, we would have lost him altogether because he could move through the woods as silently as a shadow. We hung back, watching him when he stopped and cocked his head, then took off running so fast that we had a hard time keeping up. We lost him for a moment when he disappeared into a scrub-lined ravine. Something hit the ground with a crash, and a creature thrashed the foliage. I flew toward the sound and found Garrod bent over an injured doe, its limbs scrabbling feebly. Garrod's back was to me, but I could see the creature shudder, then grow still. After a time, Garrod straightened and stood up, lifting the deer as if it weighed nothing. Cradling the lifeless body in his arms, he climbed out of the gully and picked his way through the woods. Edric had joined me, and we were both following Garrod when he suddenly disappeared. It wasn't until we reached the spot where he'd vanished that we saw the opening to the cave. It was pitch black inside, and I expected him to light a candle or torch. He didn't, though, and we had to use our special sounds to find him. Garrod was walking purposefully to a large hook set into the stone, moving as if he could see perfectly well. After tying the deer's hind legs together with a strip of leather, he hung the carcass up to drain, setting a wooden bowl under it to catch the blood. Then, taking off his cape, he turned toward a large box set on a broad stone platform. I wondered what could be in the box that had to be kept so secret. Weapons, perhaps? Something magical? Secret messages about an invasion? Yet of all the things I imagined, nothing could have surprised me more than what happened next. He must have kept the hinges well oiled, for he lifted the lid without making a sound. I craned my neck to see when he reached inside, but all he did was take out a pillow and plump it between his hands. After setting the pillow back in the box, he climbed in, lay down, and yawned. Although his two front teeth had looked normal when I spoke to him in the castle, they were now long, pointed, and tipped with blood. I gasped when I realized what it meant. Handsome Prince Garrod, suitor to the future Green Witch of Greater Greensward, and possibly my own ancestor, was a vampire. Garrod must have heard me because he blinked and looked in our direction. He began to sit up, but we didn't wait to see what he'd do next. Beating our wings as fast as they could carry us, Edric and I darted out of the cave and zipped between the trees. I didn't even try to talk to Edric until the trees thinned and we could fly side by side. "He's a vampire," I said. "We'd better hurry back and tell Millie. I was sure he had some kind of secret, but I never thought it could be this bad." I didn't have anything against vampires as long as they kept to themselves, but I certainly didn't want Hazel to marry one. Not only did vampires exist on the blood of others, but they were known to carry all kinds of diseases, keep terrible hours, and spend most of their time trying to convert everyone they met. I guess that explains where he goes every night, said Edric. And I thought he wasn't feeling well. He won't be, I said. Not if he tries to marry into my family. We were out of the forest, speeding back to the castle, when we heard the nicker of horses and saw three men at the edge of a pond. We wouldn't have paid them any heed if we hadn't noticed that one was Fenton. He was arguing with two men I didn't know, a hulking man with a neck as big as his oversized biceps, and a smaller man with a narrow face and pointed chin. "Let's see what that's all about," I said to Edric. "I thought you were in a hurry to get back to the castle."
"I am, but Millie asked me to find out what I could about all the princes. We won't stay long."
We flew closer, hoping to hear their conversation. Circling the pond, we landed in the grass at the edge.
"I'm tired of your excuses," said the shorter man. "You've owed me this money for a fortnight, and if I don't get it today, Georgie here will make you wish your ancestors had never been born."
The big man grunted and narrowed his eyes until he looked fierce.
"I told you you'll get it," said Fenton. "Once Princess Hazel chooses me, I'll push up the wedding date. Greensward's coffers have never been fuller. There's plenty there to pay off my debts and finance my return to the tournament circuit. I'm at the peak of my jousting career. The crowds love me, and so does the princess."
"What makes you think she'll choose you?"
"Because I'm her best choice, and she knows it. Some suitors have left already, scared off by the princess or that blasted dragon her father wanted us to kill. I'm the most attentive, as well as the best looking. She'll choose me, I'm sure of it."
"You'd better be right," said the smaller man. "Georgie doesn't like to be kept waiting."
As Prince Fenton mounted his horse and started back to the castle, we took to the air once again. I had a mission ahead of me. I had promised myself I would find out what I could about Millie's sister's suitors, and I had plenty to tell, regardless of dyspepsia's warning.